This Do Lectures episode features philanthropist and founder of the Blink Now Foundation, Maggie Doyne, recorded live at the global event in Cardigan, West Wales in 2010.
I'm so excited to be here. I'm doing a little bit of nervousness right now. But I'm standing here today, 23 years old, and I flew in yesterday, the day before yesterday, from Nepal. How does a 23-year-old American girl from New Jersey, college-bound 4 years ago, end up in a remote Himalayan village raising over 200 children who have been orphaned as a result of disease and civil war? I'm here to tell that story today, and I hope you enjoy. The name of my project is Kopila Valley Children's Home, and just this last couple of months, actually, we've launched a school called Kopila Valley Primary School. My story began exactly 5 years ago when I woke up one morning at 18 years old and had a scary realization. I went to a great public school in the U.S., received what I think is one of the best educations our system has to offer. But as much as I knew about the outside world and all of the facts that I had been forced to memorize and retain on history and math, I knew very little about myself and what I wanted in my life and the inside sort of things. And I was really lucky I woke up with that feeling at 18. So I deferred college. I put off my university for what I thought was going to be a year. And I packed up a backpack with very few belongings. And I decided to take a trip around the world. I had never really traveled, never left my country. I had been on camping trips, so I knew how to rough it. And packed up everything I owned as my friends were going off to their dorms and set off to travel and hike and discover. I started off in the South Pacific Islands and did volunteer work, conservation work. All of a sudden, my whole world opened up. There was so much to learn and so much to discover outside of the walls of a four-walled classroom. And I got my passion back, my passion to live, to learn, and to be human on this earth again. After that first couple of months, I realized I was hungry for more. And I decided to sign up for an internship in northeastern India in a project for children. And I didn't know anything. It's good being young. I just packed up my backpack again, got on an airplane, and set out for a foothill region in northeastern India. And I was working with children, and it turned out that where I happened to be volunteering and working, I was working with Nepalese refugees and a Nepali refugee community. And as good as my education was, I didn't know that Nepal was even a country when I was 18 years old. I didn't know what was going on. I didn't know that there had been a civil war that had forced children and families to flee their homes and come to India in this country that was so foreign to them. Picture your typical poverty, your typical refugee community living under plastic, no water, menial jobs that even the untouchable Indians won't do. And I started asking questions. If they're living in these conditions that are so bad, what are they running away from? And it just so happened in 2006 that there was an armistice and the border of Nepal opened up for the first time, and I became really curious and I wanted to take a trip. So I packed up my backpack again and I decided with my good friend Sunita, a Nepalese refugee young girl, 16 years old, who had left her village at about 8 and never returned at the start of the Maoist insurgency. The two of us had become friends, and we were reading the happenings and sort of trying to figure out what was going on in the country. And we decided to take a trip. And I had no idea what I was in for. I got on the bus. I was on that bus for 2 days. And then the driver sort of looked back at us. We were these two young girls, and he said, "All right, it's the end of the road, it's time to get out." And sure enough, we got out, and ahead of us was this Himalayan stretch of the most beautiful landscape I'd ever seen, and no road. And we got out, and we had to trek for 2.5 days until we found Sunita's village. So I'm in a post-Civil War very ravaged. The war's just ended, but just stunned by the beauty and the sense of community. And we trekked, and I was the most sore I've ever been, even as an athlete. But we made it. And the sad thing that we discovered was that Sunita's home and her family had sort of dissipated. Her village hut had been converted into the Maoist military base camp center, and her family wasn't there. again, it was a meaningful trip. We got information on her family, and I felt this sense of belonging and this sense of home that I hadn't felt in a very long time, and I knew that there was something for me. So my travels continued, and I ultimately ended up doing some city travel. I trekked back down, and I was walking down the road one day when I locked eyes with this little girl. Her name is Laukora. And I soon came to know that this was her job. She's a child porter. And her job every day was to take loads, this is about 60 kg, from the bus park all the way into the villages. And she'd go back and forth all day. And as we know, child labor, this is the reality of it. She'd make $1, $2 in the day to feed her family. This is the life of a Nepalese orphan. This is the life of an orphan child in our world today. I looked at her and I saw every single piece of myself. And I was devastated. I thought, what have we done as a human family that our children are living this way? I thought of myself. I saw every single piece of myself in this child. And I thought, oh God, I grew up with a trampoline in my backyard, and I was on the soccer field, and I was going to my first dance when I was her age. And my whole world just collapsed in a second. And I soon kept reading, and I found out that there were 80 million children just like her in the world. And I was devastated. I was ashamed to be a part of this human family, that this is the way our children were living. I promise it gets happier, this story. So I continued to meet them. I was fascinated with these young girls. And there were stories of children on the side of this one particular riverbed that I had to cross every day to get to my room where we were renting. And these girls would pick up dry rocks on the side of a riverbed and break them into smaller pieces, and they would sell them. And they were happy, believe it or not. There were smiles on their faces, and they made a life out of this for themselves. And then I met one particular girl. Her name was Hima, and this is Hima here. She was 7 years old, and she was one of those children on the side of the dry riverbed. But every day when I walked to meet her, she'd just smile with these big, bright eyes, and she'd say, Namaste, Didi. And some days she would be picking up garbage, but every day it was the same smile and the same look, and it captured me. And I thought for the first time, okay, Maggie, forget the 1 million kids. Forget the 80 million. I can't begin to wrap my fingers and my head around these stats. What if you just started with Hemo? Is there something that you can do to change the life of just one child? And I went around to the community and the village, and I talked to principals and village leaders and the elders. And sure enough, I found the reason why all of these children were out of school. It was because they needed the income to support their families, and they couldn't afford the tuition fees, the uniform, the books. It's a pretty big chunk of money, which is about $8 to $10. And I thought at 18, and as the entrepreneurial mind that I have, okay, I can do that. What if I just supported the education of this one child? How would her life change? And this is Hima a couple of weeks later. I put her into school and followed and tracked her progress. And her life, sure enough, did change. If you know what happens when we educate young girls and women, the stats are unbelievable. It's just the right thing to do to put a child into primary school. The world will change when our children and our women are educated. They have less children. They raise better families. They raise more educated children. Their disease, everything decreases. Poverty levels, communities and villages change. And the thing about this work that I do is that it's very addicting. So I thought, okay, one kid, if I could do one, why not 10? Why not five? What if my dream was to walk across this dry riverbed one day and not see a single child breaking stone? That's what I want. I want to create a world that I want to see every day. And I think we have the power to do that. So these were the next five girls that I enrolled into school. But the sad thing was that I didn't think it was enough. There were kids that didn't have homes and families, and they were orphans. And one day I had this idea. I found a piece of land, and it just happened to be $5,000. And I wanted to build a home for orphan kids, a home and a school and a base where the kids that couldn't go to school because they didn't have a home, they could call this place their home. And I called up my parents one day, and I said, can you send me over my $5,000 of life savings? I had saved up from the time I was about 6 years old, every penny. I babysat starting from the time I was 12 to when I was 18. And we had a very long conversation that day. I think it was like the middle of the night over there in the US. And sure enough, because my parents are amazing people, they wired over that $5,000, and I bought my first piece of property in Nepal. And I found this beautiful community of people and women and villagers and elders who wanted to help me and wanted to support me and take part of, in this. We had no money left after that, just this vision and this dream, and a couple of shovels. And so all we did is just take those shovels and dig a hole in the ground. That was all we could do, and I just had to get my hands dirty. I had to be a part of it. I could see everything that I wanted to create in my mind, but we didn't have the resources. We just had the sense of hope and that this was the right thing to do. This was one of the best days of my life. The whole village came out, and we dug the foundation to the home. And every good home needs a solid foundation. And I didn't have anything left except for a ticket home, and so I went home and I started to babysit. I thought I could babysit and nanny my way into building this home for children. And I got about 2 or 3 weeks in, and I realized that it was just enough money to build the septic tank. And so I started to share my story with children in my community, and sure enough, with garage sales and every fundraiser, bake sales, you know, little dollar at a time, we saved up enough money to build this. And then this story broke in the newspaper, local girls trying to build a home for children. And sure enough, $20, $40 donations started coming in. And the home started going up. This is Chiron, my main mason, my hero. He built and helped with the design of the home. We had over 200 local people come out to take part in the construction. This is one of my favorites, aunties. And in just 6 months, we built this. It's a two-story home. That's now the home of 30 orphan children in Nepal. I got my first big break to build the second story when I got a call from Cosmo Girl magazine. They announced that I was the winner of $20,000 from Maybelline, believe it or not. I don't wear a lot of makeup, so it's pretty ironic. This girl on the phone calls up. She's in her 20s. She's very cosmopolitan, New York City. And she goes, guess what? I have the best news for you. And I'm like, what? You just won $20,000. From Maybelline, and I'm shocked, like my heart's beating. $20,000 is a ton of money over there. She goes, it gets even better. And I'm like, what? What could possibly be better than $20,000 for my children? And she goes, we're gonna whisk you away into New York City for a Maybelline makeover. And I thought, okay. I had lace in my hair at the time. I still remember the hairdresser looking at me like, oh my gosh, how did this girl get here? But these are my children, and this is where that $20,000 went, and the makeover was worth it. I didn't let them dye my hair chocolate brown. There were just some things I wouldn't give into. This is my family. I think this is when we were about 15. We've since grown to 30. Kopila Valley is the home of children like Karma. She was sold at the age of 6 or 7 as a domestic servant. And her job was to take care of the younger children in this family. And every day she'd put their uniforms on and send them off to school. And I have a clip of her expressing that sadness of sending the children up the path to school and not being able to go. She came down to live with us barefoot. She walked for 4 days to get from her village, and she did about 4 years worth of schooling in just 1 year, taught herself to read and write. We'd find her up in her bedroom writing the ABCs. This is my Naveen. It's amazing how these children take care of each other. They bring each other in. They just love one another so much. We can't even get them to sleep in separate beds. These are three of my girls. I could spend days telling you their stories, and all of them will be the first literate generation of their families, the first girls and boys to get a chance to go to school, learn how to write their own name. We push sustainability. The children grow their own food, their own vegetables. They're a part of the cooking process. We raise goats and turkeys and chickens and cows. It's really an important part of what we do, especially in a country like Nepal, where 90% of the population relies on subsistence farming. So we're trying to raise them with that awareness. I wish you could all come. It's just this beautiful place. It's this beautiful slice of hope. Shortly after, just last year actually, I won $100,000 from an organization called DoSomething.org, which was just a dream come true. Things sort of just began to fall into place, going from having no money to all of a sudden having a $100,000 check in my hand to do whatever I wanted. It was amazing. This is the night that we found out we won the money. This is me with my parents, and without them and without their yes that they gave me to live my dream and follow my heart, this wouldn't be possible, so I wanted to put them in here. And with that $100,000, true to our American culture, I got my picture on the back of Doritos, America's favorite snack food. So if you're ever in the States, pick them up. It's the Cool Ranch flavor. So all of a sudden, I had $100,000 in a year to build a school for 200 kids, over 200 children. At the same time, this little boy was abandoned at the local bus station. And I found myself with a 1.5-year-old. And he didn't have a name, so he had a scar on his forehead, and the kids named him Harry Potter. This is me with Harry. But we had to find a piece of land right away, and I wanted to start. I wanted to get my hands dirty. The first thing I actually did with the money was take the kids on elephant rides. I decided for the architecture piece to go with bamboo, which if you could do some reading on bamboo construction, it's sustainable, locally harvested, very strong, believe it or not, structurally. This is my son, Santosh, holding the piece. And sure enough, people and the right people just started to sort of show up to help. I had an architect come over from Australia, or Niv, and he left his high-powered job, stepped out of the office, heard our story, and said, hey, I'll come over and design this thing for you. The cool thing about bamboo, when you're on a low budget, like I was, you can take it apart and put it back together. It has a lifespan of about 20 years. And it's like Legos. It's actually very fun to build with. But the local people didn't know how to use it and harvest it, actually. So Orr did the job of really training the local team to build this by themselves with their own resources. And he built this first classroom with them. This is the second grade. And then he did the best thing he could have done. He walked away and he went trekking for 2 weeks. And he said, all right, guys, it's time for you to figure this out. And sure enough, our local team that had never built or dealt with bamboo construction built three more classrooms in the span of 2 weeks. And this is our structure going up. This is the first four classrooms, nursery to second grade. That's a septic tank, actually. The school has just opened this past June, and it's a beautiful place. It was made from the earth with clay and stone and bamboo and a tin roof. And the children, all 200 of them, will be, again, the first literate children of their families. They get health care, basic medical treatment, a meal every day, which is usually the only meal that they will receive. Here's the view of the aerial view from the house. The land that I ended up finding was actually just a stone's throw away. After searching for 6 months and having deal after deal fall through, it was not easy. This was a year of the hardest work that I've ever done, and sleepless nights and everything else you can imagine. But that first day of school was amazing. We opened with a big puppet show, and we have the stage that we made. Every psychologist that I've talked to has said that for children, the best thing you can do is have them performing and doing art and music and sports, just getting them to express themselves as much as possible. So we did a big show on stage, and the kids narrated everything with puppets. Here's the girls up on stage. and our soccer team. And I didn't want this to be a sad story, so Lalkota actually, this is her a year ago, and this is her today, in her classroom and in her uniform. It's what I think every girl and every child deserves, is a home and a safe place to live and just their most basic needs. Again, 80 million children in the world today that are out of school, that don't have enough food, that aren't safe, some who won't make it past the age of 5. It's overwhelming and it's sad, and I hate to be the bearer of bad news always, and I have to be a lot of the times. But I think we can do it. I think we all have the power to create something. And I don't think you have to go 8,000 miles away to the foothills of the Himalayas. I think the beauty of all of us is that we have talents and we have gifts. And this just happened to be mine, and I'm really lucky to have found it and created my little slice of heaven, my little paradise. And I think that the world will change when we all find that for ourselves, where we wake up every day and we wouldn't rather be anywhere else in the world doing any other kind of work. And it just so happens it would be great if that work really everybody profited and only good could come out of it. So that's Kopila Valley to me. It's my slice of heaven. And why do I think it worked when so many organizations and so many projects out there tend to fail these days, especially with our foreign aid? I think being young really helped. I'm standing up here at 23 years old, not the oldest or the wisest person here, but being young was my greatest strength, I think. That attitude that some people call it, you're naive or, you know, you think that you're unstoppable. But really, if we all had that attitude that we could do anything, that we could be anything if we followed our dreams and our hearts. And I even see myself sort of losing it as I get older. We start to get more doubtful. We think of all of the things we don't have instead of the things that we do have. Oh, I could do that if I had more money. I could do that if I had my master's degrees, once I have my PhD, after I'm settled, after I'm established, after I'm famous. Well, what if everything you had was everything you have right now, your body and your mind and that sense of I can do anything? I watched my children the other day. I just took this picture, and they were trying to get a kite up in the air. And they were entertaining themselves for 2 hours just trying to get this kite up. And I was watching them, and I was like, you guys, you're not going to be able to do it without the wind. And they just kept trying and trying and trying for hours and hours. And sure enough, just after I came up on the roof, I said, guys, you need the wind. And a huge gust of wind swept through, and the kite went up in the air, and they all just cheered. And I thought of that childlike feeling of, keep going, keep trying, and you won't fail. I thought it was a really powerful message for myself, that if we could all go back to that childlike state of just keep going, have fun with it, it would be a really beautiful place. So my big do, David yesterday said we have to dream big. So there's 80 million children in the world right now. And in my lifetime, who are orphaned and who don't have enough food to eat and are out of primary school, in my lifetime, I would like to see all of them have their basic, most basic human needs met. Luckily, I'm only 23, so we have a lot of time to do that. And I think that we can. And my little do, I guess, would be my 30 children at home waiting for me. They're all under the age of, a lot of them are under the age of 5, and they need a lot of focus and attention right now. So that's where I'm headed. Thank you all very much.
The Do Lectures is here to share stories of remarkable people in the hope they will inspire you to go and do amazing things too. There are over 300 talks to listen to, or if you prefer, watch on our website, thedolectures.com. Hit the subscribe button on your favorite podcast platform to get the latest episodes when they come out.